Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have Todra Kendall, who writes romance in just about all of its forms. She loves unlikely pairings, strong women, sexy guys, hot love scenes, and just enough conflict to make it interesting. Her books include YA and young adult, paranormal romance, new adult and adult contemporary romance, and paramystery romance. She lives in Central Florida with a husband, kids, sweet pup, and two mini cats. And yeah, she rocks the purple hair. You can find out more about Todra at her website. And all these links are right here on this page. If you're listening online, her website, she's got an Amazon author page, Facebook, Twitter account, and Instagram. And you can also click on a link to sign up for her newsletter, which is a really awesome way to keep up with authors. If you aren't subscribed to your favorite authors, you need to subscribe to their newsletters. So I'm going to bring her on right now. And welcome to the show, Todra.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we could get you in. You are the first of my two shows tonight, so you're the leadoff batter, so let's hit this one out of the park.
Sounds like a plan.
So you're out in Central Florida. Are you guys still getting bad weather out there?
We are not too – it's not too bad. I like to say that I am the hurricane whisperer. We've lived here for 9 years. And since I moved to Central Florida, knock wood, there has not been any major weather disturbance. However, I lived in New Jersey before then. Since I've left New Jersey, they've had three hurricanes and several bizarre weather anomalies. So you do the math.
Yeah, you're definitely the hurricane whisperer. Hey, you need to come to Texas for a while because we don't need any down here now. We've had way too much water. Just till summer's over.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's a good record. I like that.
My husband does tell people that.
but you could totally write a book about that.
I could. There you go.
Magical weather power.
There you go. That's true.
Well, welcome to the show, and we are going to talk a little bit about. We'll just talk about you and your influences. So I hope you don't mind my prying. And from what you told me before that you used to interview authors once a month. So you're kind of in the hot seat compared to where you were before. So, but at least you know where I'm coming from.
Exactly. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your writing journey. Where were your first inspirations for writing?
I was a reader as long as I can remember. I had a lot of very strong influences toward reading growing up. My grandmother, my paternal grandmother, always had a book, and it was a great influence. My parents were big readers, and they never limited me in what I could read. You know, nobody said this is above your grade level. Nobody said this has stuff in it you shouldn't read. Nobody, gave any limitations there. So I tended to just devour everything. And I think if you are a storyteller, the natural outlet after reading is usually writing. You get to a point and think, well, I have a story to tell too. And I had been writing probably from the time I was 9 or 10, I mean maybe before, but I had my first short story published in a magazine called Child's Life when I was 14, and it was a paranormal that had won a contest and
wow.
Locally. So, yes. And then I took I took a brief about 30-year hiatus after that, and I was still writing, but a lot of my writing energy was going into school. You know, I think school tends to suck a lot of creativity out of the writing process. You know, you have to learn papers and footnotes and all that fun stuff. I also learned style and format and wonderful things that have since helped me. But and then I wrote a little bit along the way. I would write a short story here or there, do that. And then in 2008, I was stuck in bed. I was sick. And I had these two books that were sitting next to my bed that I'd had forever, and I picked them up and started reading them. And it was Twilight, you know, the one that everybody had been talking about. I had knew nothing about. I read the first two books and knew the third one was out and broke doctor's orders and got in the car and drove down and bought it because this was before Kindle. You know, this was we didn't have e-readers in those days, or I didn't at least. And I just was inspired, not maybe so much by the actual story of Twilight, although I enjoyed it, but by the author's journey. And I thought, you know, I'm going to try this because she had said that she started in the middle of the book. And I thought, I will do this. And by December, I had my first book. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and that was.
It's so funny how many people. So many people say that Twilight was a gateway drug to romance.
It is.
And they'll all say the same thing. It's like maybe it wasn't so much that, you know, the actual story, or I didn't really care about the writing. It was just that it was like, wow, romance can be like this. And then they started picking up adult romances and then, you know, like readers.
Right.
And I was the same way. I was a straight-laced librarian, you know, literary fiction only. I read a whole lot of nonfiction crap. I was very boring. But I was a young adult librarian, so I was having to advise kids. And the girls kept saying, come on, you've got to read it. And I was like, fine, give me the book, you know. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. And after that, it was on, like Donkey Kong.
And it was a perfect storm. It was a perfect storm because right around the time that Twilight was really hitting its stride, because now I picked it up, I read it right before. I had a month to wait from the time I finished the third book until the fourth one came out. So that was, you know, that was a long month. But, you know, then everything else began to hit. Indie publishing hit it. We e-readers became accessible. It was the perfect storm. And I think that's why you see and you hear so many authors, especially indie authors, saying Stephanie Meyer gave us our inspiration for going forward. Yeah. So
She opened a lot of doors. She really did.
She opened
a lot of doors.
Yeah.
And, you know,
exactly.
People can critique her work all they want. She made a fortune. She continues to make a fortune. And, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like,
and she.
I'd like
she
my
hit,
books to be half that, you know. Yeah.
she hit it at the right time. She hit with the right people. It worked out. It was, you know, it was great. And again, I think she encouraged a lot of, even though she was not indie, I think it just, her story did kind of encourage the author. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Much like, you know, E.L. James opened the door for the racier stories, I think.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of where she got the story and how it came about, people bought it. And since they bought that, you know, erotic romance genre has just and it's not so taboo anymore either, you know. It's like, oh,
no.
Thank you. That and the days of women hiding their book behind another book are pretty much over.
I think so, and I think that's great. I you know, I'm all for empowerment, and I'm an eclectic reader. I'm an eclectic writer, but I'm really an eclectic reader. If you thought, well, you know, you're talking about nonfiction, I always have a mix of nonfiction, fiction, and it goes from all literary fiction, biographies, everything on my Kindle, and so I love the fact that I never have to hide. Well, I'm reading on my Kindle, so nobody's seeing it, but still, I'm not hiding it.
Oh no, I'm happy to review. You know, whatever. If I liked it, there might be a chance that somebody else might like it. So I'm going to tell them how I felt about it, you know. So,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No hiding books anymore.
No. And I was really fortunate that Twilight also opened doors. Because we had that month that people probably don't remember this, but everybody had declared radio silence with all of her books. She closed down her website, she closed down all her fan clubs so there would be no leaks. And I ended up making friends with some some people on a group called Twi Moms. Mm-hmm. We were Twi Moms, and we were all writing, and we all got to be good friends. We actually made another group that became a writer critique group, and it's where I met my business partner, who we have since, you know, done a lot together, and uh-huh. and then subsequently met a lot of authors who I had done other work with and partnerships and so on. So I give Stephanie Meyer a lot of credit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all. Yeah. I think that's wonderful. I really do. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It is.
So you were before this, you had a life before this. You said you went to college and things like that. So when did, mm-hmm. do you write full time now?
I was an army wife. My husband and I got married. We just celebrated our 29th wedding anniversary this
week.
Oh,
awesome.
So we've been married a long, long time. Thank you. Yeah. And
that's
so,
awesome.
we have, four children, and I spent the majority of, once we were married and then, kids came along, I was an army wife. I was a mom. Mm-hmm. We homeschooled. I have one left. I have a 15-year-old left who we're still plogging through the homeschooling. So, that was basically my life for the bulk of the last 29 years. And,
wow.
Yeah. And then, it worked out really well for me because my writing career came along at the point that my kids were really, I think my son was 10, 11. No, he was 11 when my first book was published. He was 11.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's really, for a boy, that's pretty self-sufficient.
Yeah, more independent.
Yeah. Exactly. My oldest is 27, so she was, she was old enough to be on her own, too. She was actually married. Yeah, she was married.
Yeah.
Again, so. Yeah. So anyway, it was perfect for me because I see a lot of authors who are juggling toddlers and babies and think, oh, I'm so glad that's not me. You know?
Right. Yeah.
God
that's
bless
why I don't write right
crazy.
Now.
I don't.
Like, what are you gonna write? I said, when my son goes to school. Not gonna happen.
It's the truth, and I really do. I feel like it worked out very well for me because I've never had to really, juggle a lot. They still get a little testy every now and again if I'm not paying attention, but, it's not like a two-year-old where they're going to go destroy the bathroom if I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I have one of those.
He's almost five, but he'll destroy everything. So, yeah, he's fun. He's probably out of the size of the door right now.
Oh, and it's a fabulous time of life. It really is. I loved it. I absolutely loved being a mommy. But I'm full time writer and all the other fun stuff that comes along with that, promotions and all the hats that we wear as authors. So.
That's the one thing I like to bring up and make sure that people hear when they're listening to the show is, the life of being an author is not as glamorous as you think. you've got to put blood, sweat, and tears into every bit of it, whether you like it or, some people love certain parts of, aspects of the writing process and publishing process. I've heard people they love rewrites. I'm like, I can't even imagine having a rewrite. That just makes me want to scream. But if you like it, that's great. But see, I love the marketing end of it, like you were mm-hmm. the promotions part. And but a lot of people don't realize how much you have to put into that.
It is. I work, I hit the ground running usually about 6:30 in the morning, and if it's an easy day, I'm in bed by 1. So,
wow.
And I'm not working constantly. I know, I do cook dinner every now and again. I do, I do venture to the laundry room and that kind of thing. But, it's flexible, but it's always there. My husband says the laptop is glued to my lap at all times. And that's pretty much accurate. But I say, it wasn't, I'd fall asleep on the sofa while we were watching TV. So be happy my eyes are open. There's a lot of attendant work. You know, there's besides promotion, there is just, you know, the fun things like uploading and checking all your markets and all those things, making sure everything is where it's supposed to be, and, you know, just keeping your hands on every pulse.
So what percentage of time would you say you're actually doing the writing overall?
I would say probably about 60% of the time.
I don't think people get that. 40% of the time you're doing other things, and that's just, wow.
Yeah, and it's a little different. Yeah, last year it was probably 60% writing and then 40% travel and that kind of thing. Now this year, I'm not traveling as much, thank God. Mm-hmm. And so that has eased things up quite a bit, where I would think, okay, I have a deadline, but I also am going to be here, here, and here in between that. So that means, you know, everything has to kind of be picked up a little bit. So it's nice to know. My kids are homeschooled, so they don't really understand this, but I keep saying I'm like a kid just out of school for the summer, because everything I had for this summer ended up getting canceled, postponed, what have you. And I have the whole summer. Like, oh,
wow.
All I have to do is write and promotion, all that. I don't have to travel anywhere. And we traveled a lot last summer, so they're pretty happy too. It's kind of like getting as unhappy as I am about some of the things that didn't come about travel wise, I think everything happens for a reason. And so I'm it's going to be fun to be at home. Yeah,
you can't be an army wife and not believe that one. Everything happens for a reason.
yeah, that is true. I was an army wife. I was an army brat. I travel a lot, but I'm quite happy to be here. So it's going to be a good summer.
Well, maybe you can actually rest and relax some. That would be great.
I know. It's more beach days. That sounds good to me. That's what I'm planning on it. Yeah.
How close drive, an hour or two to get to the beach?
Oh, no, not even that.
Oh, wow.
40
that's
minutes,
great.
Maybe. Yeah. We're about 40 minutes from, really, we usually go to New Smyrna Beach, which is just kind of up the road. And it's nice for me because I actually based one of my favorite book series is based on New Smyrna. It's called Crystal Cove in my book. But so, you know, I go up there and I not only am I relaxing a little bit, I'm also getting inspiration. And
that's right.
You know, yeah, it is. It's always a good excuse. Oh, I have to go to the beach. I'm working on a new book.
Well, and that's the life of a writer anyway, because like you said, as a storyteller, you know, your outlet is writing, but as being a storyteller, you're always looking for stories to tell. So you're getting that kind of inspiration from everywhere you go, pretty much. So research is a good reason to go to the beach.
It is. And I actually, in the first Crystal Cove book, there's a bed and breakfast that is being built, and it was based on a bed and breakfast that was being built the summer I wrote the book. And then just within the last year, my husband and I actually went to stay in the bed and breakfast. It's called the Inn on the Avenue, and it's fabulous, and we love it. But every time I go, I get, you know, I talk to the wonderful woman who runs it, and she gives me insight into what's going on in town, and I get more stories. I'm like,
oh, how awesome.
Great.
Does she know you do that?
Oh, yes. She's quite telling you. We know that the names are changed to protect the innocent and the guilty. And,
and the guilty.
She's great about it. So, yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you write kind of across the subgenres, and you also write for young adults. So was there a reason why you wanted to write a young adult, or was it just something that came to you and fit the young adult theme?
I had never really set out to write young adult. I hadn't really thought about young adult. And then, as I said, I read Twilight, and of course, so that was, you know, the first inspiration mm-hmm. there. And the story that came just happened to begin with a girl who was in high school. It actually, and she's in college, but the all four books in that quartet are YA because, you know, just the nature of them, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And then I intended to write about a spinoff. I intended to write a spinoff series about one of the characters, and I really hadn't thought about stepping out of YA. And the story for the first Crystal Cove just kind of fell into my lap as I was driving home from the beach one day, and it just came to me, characters just fast and furious, and so I wrote it, but it was definitely an adult book. The character, the main character, is actually in her 40s and has been widowed, and so I said, well, I'm going to write this adult book first, and once I wrote adult, all my readers said, you can't go back to YA. You're now closed. The gate is closed. It's done. There's no more.
It's like you grew up and you can't go back.
Exactly. They said, no more YA. And it's actually been great for me because it has opened up. It's definitely more of my speed. I love my YA readers. I still get a nice infusion from, you know, from that first quartet. And I love to talk to them. And, you know, that's a great thing to do. I visit schools and talk to them, and we, you know, go over things. But yeah, adult is kind of where I am, and it's a little easier for me. So
it's easier to not have to keep checking yourself constantly, probably.
Yeah.
It's like, definitely. Is that scene a little too much? You know, constant
exactly.
rethinking. I was a young adult librarian, like I said, and it was hard for me because I would have parents of 10-year-olds coming up and saying, you know, their kids has read everything in the children's area, has read all the Harry Potters, you know, they're ready for books that, you know, are next. And I'm like, but you don't understand. Mm-hmm. Young adult gets into things that they won't understand yet. And they're like, no, I think they can handle it. They want to read Twilight. And I was like, okay, well, I think Twilight would be okay. And I think that, you know, they probably won't get much out of New Moon because a 10-year-old knows nothing about breaking up. you know, by the time they get to Eclipse, that, they might get something out of that just because the wolves and the fighting and the whole bit going on. But I said, you will not like it if they read the fourth book. And I said, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. You know, so it was just kind of like, because they grew up during those four books too, you know,
right?
Like you're saying about your character, and their actions, their sexual tension grew stronger, and then they were married, so they could do whatever they want, you know. So I was like, you know, telling this parent once they get started, they're not going to want to stop. So
no, and I've had because my paranormals are all in the same world, there are characters from that YA quartet who went on, and I have one reader in particular who is dying to read the first book of the Serendipity series, but it is so not YA. I mean, it is so not YA. And her mother keeps saying, no. And I keep saying, no. You know, it just, And it was something I knew about this character. He came in, and I knew in the third book that he was pushing my YA boundaries. In the third book, I was saying, you know, please, you know, hold your horses here. You'll get your own book, but please.
Not over here.
Yeah, not here. Not here, not yet. And once let loose, he reads that. But it is, you know, it's very hard then to say to readers, you know, and even, you know, my own kids don't want to read anything that I've written that has sex in it. That's just, you know, that's the line. Not because, just because it's me, you know, because I've written it, they don't want that. So, so they made me promise to write a book, and it's actually coming out on my 50th birthday next year, next April, that is a huge apocalyptic paranormal that's bringing all of my paranormal worlds together. And it's going to be, a showdown that will bring all of the different paranormal series together. But I have a group of readers who say, what do you mean there'll be no sex? So we're thinking of doing two books. We're thinking of doing a Todger's Kids Friendly version of it. And then maybe a little asterisk next to it. If you want to see what happened next, click here.
PG-13, rated R.
Exactly. That's what I'm working out.
Uncut, unedited version or whatever.
I'm pretty sure that that's what's going to happen because, you try to make everybody happy.
That's funny.
Yeah,
I would probably feel a little weird reading something. Of course, the first time I let my mom read something of mine that had sex in it, I was waiting for her to say something. I was watching her read it because it was a short story, and I was waiting. I was just waiting for. She didn't say anything, and I was just like, okay. She's like, that was pretty good. I was like, okay. She didn't say anything, but I was like, that'd be awkward. Especially me watching.
I don't have that experience. Both of my parents actually passed away 9 and 10 years ago this month, and I did not write anything that they read, beyond that. So I will, this might sound heartless, but I think that that's part of why I was able to actually write it, because I didn't have any worries of who was going to who was going to say it. I mean, my business partner will say to me, because she's been reading my stuff, for 8 years now, and so she will say, I just skimmed through that book, or I pretend it's somebody else writing it when you're writing it. So she said, you're like my big sister, and I cannot even think about you writing it. Okay, that's fine.
You thought those thoughts?
I know. Okay, that's fine. I say, everybody does what they have to do. Yeah.
Does your husband read stuff?
I think my husband has read some of it. My husband is a priest, so that's been, that's another interesting angle in our lives. I actually wrote my first four books before he was a priest. He's a late in life vocation priest. And I already was published before, and then he was a hospice chaplain. So before he got his first church, I had already published these books. So the people in our church know that I'm a writer. Some of them have read them, and I have some wonderful ladies who will come up to me during church and pat my hand and say, "Well, we're glad somebody's doing it." thank you. And then I pass out. I know that a good portion of them don't really have an idea of what it is I'm writing, because some have said, why is Father Clint's wife not selling her books in church? And my formatter, who is a dear, dear friend of mine, just laughs and says, no, that will never happen. He has read bits and pieces, but it's not really his genre, He will read something sometimes. I think we were on a vacation one time, and he said, this is good. I was like, well, why are you surprised? you sound really shocked.
How cute.
But he's known me since I was 17 years old, so he's entitled to be a little surprised about that. But
yeah, that's funny.
It's kind of cute.
It's kind of like, oh, after all these years, I didn't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, you did.
The person who edits all your stuff actually can,
That's great.
It's
we're about halfway through the show. I'd like to put the phone number out if you'd like to take callers.
Sure, definitely.
Okay. It is 347-633-9609. You can call in and ask questions to Todra. Hold on for a second. I got to... good old Texas weather here. Okay. So that's just, I'm still getting over you that your husband's a priest.
yes, that goes. When I'm on panels at a book event, and they'll ask, about spouses or whatever, and that's always interesting. I say, well, my husband is a priest. Yeah.
So you talked about getting inspiration from the beach and things, and obviously paranormal you like paranormal because of, you know, you were reading Twilight. Were there adult paranormal series that you really got into?
Well, I always was a huge fan of certain authors. I love Anne Rice. I just adore her as a person, as an author, just everything. And actually, while I had read the vampire books and loved them and loved that and what have you, really her favorite, my favorite of hers is the Mayfair Witches. I just love the idea of the family going, you know, way back to France and to Scotland and and all the way up to the current time. And New Orleans is my, I say it's my spirit city. I never have lived there, but it is the place where I think I was supposed to have lived, you know, all my life.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I visit frequently, and it is like a hometown to me. So I love walking around the Garden District and knowing that that's where the Mayfair witches are, you know, they're still there and wandering around and so on. So, yeah, but that, I mean, I always have loved Stephen King. I'm always a big Uncle Stevie fan. And, you know, there's been a few, there's been a few others here or there, but those are probably my biggest inspirations.
Well, it's funny how you're talking about writing the YA series and then taking characters and moving them into your adult, where like someone like Sherilyn Kinnerton had written the Dark Hunter series and is still writing them. But then she did the spinoff with Nick and did the young adult. And then, you know, I had a lot of kids really start to get into that because it mixes so many different paranormal elements. Like there's zombies, there's witches, you know, witches, there's the demons, there's everything. So, and it's in New Orleans. And I had kids get really into that, and then they were discovering her adult books. So I was like, no, you need to put that off for a few years. But she, you know, she had so many adults reading her young adult books because they were familiar with her series. So, she had like she had an audience before she even published the first one because they were familiar. So, yeah, that's a good thing to do because we like to know more about certain characters.
We do. I you know, after I finished the quartet, the YA quartet, and then started, as I said, the first Crystal Cove book was called The Posse, and it was meant to be a standalone. And we discovered during that I am incapable of writing standalone books. It's just not. There's always somebody who I find along the way who I say, oh, well, I want to know more about him, her, what have you. And that's why always the trilogy that's out right now of the Keeping Score books. There was just three of them supposed to be When We Were Us, Hanging by a Moment, and then Days of You and Me, which is coming out in September. And then in the second book, bang, two spin-off books, but they will be standalone. So those will be spin-off standalones. But
spin-off standalones.
As far as I know, I don't say anything anymore. I say that's what I think. This is what I think is going to happen. But, yeah, it's complicated.
So tell me about your cover design. I love your covers. I think you have really neat covers.
They
stand out. Especially I really like the Perfect Dish ones. The way you did the black and white with the touch-up colors, really nice. What's your process basically?
I stay as far away from it as possible, and I say,
really?
pretty. Yeah. Oh, I am so not artistically inclined. I've gotten better. I can now tell you if something really doesn't work, but I have a lot of people who I trust a lot more than I trust me because I'm not a visual cover person. I don't choose a book by the cover. And so for me, it's really hard to imagine what draws people in. I have worked with, I think, four different cover artists and, you know, all of them who are amazingly talented and just do, you know, tremendous job. And I give them a little bit of an idea and then they come back and I go, yes, great,
that's
wonderful.
Awesome.
And then I show it to all my people and we've had, you know, I've had a couple that I've had to redo. Actually, Fearless, my very first book, has gone through, I think, four different covers, and my cover artist just insisted on redoing it. Why? And I have all, and she said, because the model who is on it is on the Bigfoot porn books.
Oh.
And I don't want your book associated with that. So now Fearless has a new cover, so that's, I'm so excited about that. It's up. I haven't really announced it or promoted it yet, but it is. If you go to my, you know, you can see it. It's on all the venues, and I think the paperback is coming out. So yeah. Anyway, it's there. But yeah, I have worked with some really wonderful cover artists, and I am so grateful to them, because as I said, if it were up to me, it would be a stick figure drawn on the front and not drawn well. So that would be it.
Well, and it's fun you're able to work directly with them versus, you know, if you were going to one of the big publishers and not having that ability, because they don't let you, you know, a lot of them don't let you hardly have any input. Some of them have more freedom, but I think they're great though. They turn out really nice.
I'm still a very hands-on person. I'm hybrid published now because I'm actually published through Ever After with my paperbacks and so on. But I still have artistic control and control over a lot of different things, which is good because, as my mother used to say, I don't play well with others. So it's good for me to be able to tell people what, you know, what I want and what it needs to look like. And it's nice that in this day and age, I can say, you know what, this cover isn't working. I don't like it. Nobody really likes it. You know, we're gonna do new covers. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to go through any drama with paperwork to do that.
No. We just kind of make it happen. And, you know, it's not, I'm sure that there's people who work with me who would not love me to say there's nothing to it. They're saying, oh, really? We think there is nothing to it. But for me, they just seem to work by magic, and boom, it shows up in my email, and there. That's as far as I know.
That's working with good people then.
It is.
Yeah, seriously, you've got some good people you work with if you're able to give them that kind of, their own freedom to...
They are creative, which is what they get paid for.
So yay!
Exactly.
Finally,
they're fabulous. Yes. They do a great job, and my formatter is like the most talented person, because I send her just, you know, a document, and it comes back as a book, which I think that's magic too.
Wow, that is magic.
She puts all these pretty images in there. Like, she'll say, "Guess what I did this time?" And I think it was the second book in the Serendipity series, Unquenchable. And I opened it up, and the whole first page is all leaves behind it. I'm like, that's magic. How'd you do that? No, she told me, but I have no idea. I do a lot of nodding and smiling and going, wow, that's really cool. And then I'll say, it worked. You know, that was good. So, yeah, I have tremendously talented people around me, and I would not be able to do half of what I did without them. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
So tell us what you've got planned. What's coming up? I know you've got a book coming out. You have one that just came out, and you've got one coming out. And did you say September or August?
July. I have one coming out. I have one under my other pen name coming out June 26th or 7th, I think, whatever that Tuesday is. I think it was the 28th. I don't know. Sometime at the end of June. And that's a short story in my by Emma. It's under my Emma Fallon name, and that is erotic romance, and it is the Good Vibrations series, which has been a lot of fun. It's set in the mid-60s during the Vietnam War, and it's
okay.
It's very nostalgic, but really, really a sweet story in a sexy way. And then in July, yes, it is. At the end of July, the third book in the Always Love trilogy, which is related to the One trilogy, that comes out. So that's the third book in that one. And then in September, the last book in the Keeping Score trilogy, which is called Days of You and Me, that one comes out then.
goodness. Oh, and you got
then,
a lot going
yes, on. And then I have a paranormal coming out that's part of a multi-author series where we're doing, you know, we're releasing a new book every week. That one doesn't have a title yet, but that comes out sometime this fall. And then every Halloween, I release a new book in my Recipe for Death series. So this one is Death Over Easy. And that is a super fun series. It's power mystery, so there's always a murder mystery involved, but there's a lot of paranormal elements. The main character is a 30-something food writer who lives in a an over 55 community in Florida. She got grandmothered in when she inherited her grandmother's house in this senior citizen community. So yeah, so she has a lot of adventures with her senior friends, and it's a lot of fun to write. It's always kind of a fun break. But so that one comes out, and actually I just saw the cover for that one, and it's really adorable. So it's good too. And then next year I have my big paranormal that comes out on April 7th. That's called Age of Aquarius, and that one will be out then. And probably the two spinoffs from The Keeping Score, which are called Wildest Dreams, and the other one is something about breaking, not broken anymore, I think it's called.
Wow, that is a lot in the next
yeah.
year. Wow.
Well, usually try to do 6 to 8 a year. So that's about standard. Yeah.
That's prolific. Very prolific. That's great.
It's, you know,
I'm super impressed because, you know, if I could get something written in, you know, 5 years, I'd be happy. So, I'm super impressed.
We've established you have young children too, and I don't.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know. Yeah. So as I said, it keeps me off the streets. I keep, you know, keep putting out the books, and it keeps me happy and out of everybody's hair.
Keeps your readers happy.
Yes.
They don't have to wait.
No, they were not tremendously thrilled about having to wait until September for the third book in the Keeping Score trilogy, because I've always done series with happy endings. You know, each book, a couple has a happy ending. And this one, I warned them, I said, no, this is one story told over three books. There will be a happy ending, but it's not until book three. So, you're going to have to bear with me. And that was nerve-wracking because I've never done that. So,
how big was the uproar on that then?
Because I did warn them, there was not a huge, but I have a lot of people saying, a lot of the reviews say, when is September coming? You know, how long till September? I can't wait. I want to know what happens. Give me a heads up. I had one of my dear friend authors read it and then came back and said, listen, you have to tell me, is this going to happen? Really? You want to know? I said, listen, I'll trade you a spoiler for okay, all right, that worked out. I said, you tell me this, I'll tell you this, and we're all good. So that's one of the perks of being an author, because when you're friends with other authors, you can write to them and say,
yeah, work it out.
Yeah, I want to know. So, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a different experience to write in that world, which is sports romance, which I am a huge, huge football fan and a baseball fan. But this one is particularly college and professional football. It starts in high school, then goes through college football, and now the third book will be professional. So that's been really, really a lot of fun to do that and kind of get to live in that world.
Yeah, that'd be good research too, you know. Good to research.
Really,
good excuse to go to football games.
I know. It really is. It really, really is. I say, you know, to the kids, no, go out. I have to watch College Game Day. This is mommy's work. Please close the door behind you. That's great. It's not a bad thing, you know. No, the life of an author is not all glamour, but there is fun.
Yep. Research is pretty much always fun.
Definitely.
Well, we are we've got a little bit of time left, and I want to make sure that everybody can find you online everywhere. I know you have a website, and it's just TadraCandle.com, and that's candle with a K. So it's TadraCandle.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. And I saw on there that you have really cool playlists, and I love that. I love when authors do that because it kind of get into their mind, you know, of what they were going or what they were. I don't know. It's like a mood thing or something with music.
It is. Music is huge.
I love that. That's really cool to listen to while you're reading a book and get that sense of what you were thinking. It's kind of stalkerish, but you know, cool.
Yes, and I'm on Spotify, so you can also, I think the links are on my website. If they're not, they're on Facebook for my Spotify. And again, I'm very easy to find because I really am the only Tadra around. So if you Google my name, you're always going to find me. So, but yeah, I'm on Spotify and all my book playlists. I think all of them are on there, and they're on the website too. And they're always in the back of the book as well. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Also, well, let's see, you have your Amazon author page, and if people don't know, you can follow people. If you follow authors on their Amazon author page, then when they have updates, like sometimes you'll update a cover to a book or sometimes indie authors will revise a part of a book because it just didn't set right with them, and that update comes through, and then anything new that comes out also gets updated there, so that's really cool. I've always enjoyed that. A lot of people don't follow them on Amazon, but I'm like, that's one of the places you should, because that's almost as good as a newsletter.
It really is. It will give you a good, and BookBub, if you follow me on BookBub too, they will let you know not only when I have something new coming out, but also when any of my books go on sale.
I'm a little bit addicted to BookBub. I think I have way too many books on my Kindle cloud, but that's okay. We need a 12-step program for one-click addiction, I think. I have it. I don't know when I'm ever going to read all these books, but I also have like 5 people on my account. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to read. So I, you know, 99 cent here, $1.99 there, free here, there. I've got stuff for my husband, my mom, and me, you know, fuck it. And let's see, you're also on Facebook. You said you're on Facebook quite a bit, Twitter, and you have an Instagram. I put on here, if you're listening to this on the internet, there's also a link for your newsletter. And I can't say enough about newsletters because it's how you get the good stuff before the good stuff gets out about authors. It's like you're getting like exclusive stuff. So sign up for the newsletter. Go to all your favorite authors' pages and sign up for their newsletters because it's so great. I've read free book, get free books. You know, they're like, just because y'all are my newsletter subscribers, here's a free book. I'm like, oh, yes. And nobody's ever read this one before. Yay.
I changed newsletter companies earlier this summer. I switched from one to the other, and I had to do a test run on the other. So I said, well, I'll give 1,000 of you, you know, are my guinea pigs. So this is what you get. So, yeah, they were like, we'll definitely be guinea pigs for you. So
right?
It worked out. Yeah, you just never know. You just never know. And I always reveal covers and release dates and what have you and extra content to the newsletter subscribers before it hits anything else. Other than my private readers, my private reader group, who are my wonderful temptresses, they get everything first. So because they are, you know, they're naughty temptresses and they deserve all of it. So
And y'all are a bunch of chickens for not calling in today. Your voice would sound just fine on the radio, trust me. I feel like what's a chick from Romancing the Stone half the time because my voice is so low now.
Oh,
I get bronchitis.
Like,
well, I don't listen to myself, so, you know, I never go listen to my shows, so I don't care.
Yeah. No. Hey, as long as I'm only being heard and not being seen, I'm okay with that.
Amen to that. Me in my pajamas, no bra. Awesome.
Absolutely. That's right. We do, different things for the Indie Book Fest, which we have here in October. And I always say, wait, is it a voice interview or is it a, I'm going in there? So last July, I went to Clearwater to do a radio interview. And I'm like, this is great. I don't really have to worry. And in the middle of it, she says, oh, by the way, there's a camera right there behind you. With the
crap.
Oh, wow, hi.
Dang it. That should have been fully disclosed up ahead. Yeah.
Yes. Luckily, I was dressed fairly well, so it was okay. But it's always nice to have a heads up.
And you have to give us the dish on the purple hair. Is it?
Well,
it's definitely your signature.
It is. It is. Let's see. I think it was 2009. My daughter. My second daughter, who is now 24 and in cosmetology school, which, she's always been kind of a cutting edge girl, she decided to get pink in her hair. And my hairdresser is fabulous and wonderful and teased me and said, oh, are you going to do yours? And I said, well, she said, oh, a lot of women do it in pink for breast cancer awareness. So I lost both my parents to blood cancers. And I do work for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, and purple is their color. And purple is also the color for the American Cancer Society. So I said, well, I'll do purple. And that was, 7 years ago? And wow. And I've had it ever since. And, which is going to be this fun thing, but it became kind of, I've had, when my first 4 books came out, I had, a reader would come up to me knowing that I'm in the Orlando area and say, are you possibly the one who wrote, because she had seen my picture online, you have purple hair, Yeah. So it's nice, and it does, it's a good conversation starter, and it's kind of become part of who I am. And so there it is.
Well, don't change it. People get confused.
No. My daughter actually changed hers, from pink to green to this and that. And my hairdresser says to me, no, yours is purple. Yours lasts so long because you've always kept it purple. I tell people now it just grows in that way. It would be nice if it did. It would be really nice if it did.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I feel that way about my gray. I wish it would grow in the color I dye it, so I don't have to do it again.
The purple is good. I love it, and so that's kind of become my signature. When I do book events and everything, most of my colors are purple. I sign my books in purple, Sharpie. So
very cool.
It's fun. It is
the purple lady. Mm-hmm. Well, I have had a great time. I'm glad you were able to come on the show, and I hope that all your readers that are listening got a kick out of getting to know you a little better, and you got to get onto your reader group, because they should have called in, because they could have had a lot of fun.
I will scold them. Yes, I will.
Thanks so much for being on, and I wish you much luck in your busy, busy year you have ahead, and I hope you get to have a lot of downtime this summer and enjoy
Thank
the beach.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
And come back on the show again in the future.
Definitely. Right. I would love to. Yes, thanks very much.
All right. You have a great evening.
You too.
All right. And good evening to everybody else. I hope everything's going well with you. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian_. And this podcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website. It'll be downloaded on SoundCloud and iTunes as well. We can be found on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and just about anywhere else in the social media universe you can find. Thanks to Authors on the Air for letting me share my passion for romance and sharing these great authors. in young adult, new adult, and adult romance and erotica with you. And I will see you guys, and I will be back on at 9 p.m. Eastern with another guest, and I will see the rest of you next week. Sweet dreams.